In August of 1492, a man called variously Cristobal Colon, Spanish, Cristoforo Colombo, Italian, or as we know him, Christopher Columbus, set sail with three vessels for what was to be a pivotal journey in world history. Columbus had finally convinced King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella that he could find a westerly route to Asia. The king and the queen had, kind of, it's echoed in the words of the song, they had married their fortunes together. The fortunes of the Empire of Castile and the Empire of Aragon when they joined together. So they united these two powerful kingdoms into the kingdom of the Spanish Empire. And after several failed attempts, Columbus tried this over and over, he finally convinced them that they could further enhance their empire by letting him open up a new route to the west. So what follows is a sermon in the form of a letter that I have written to Columbus. Dear Cristoforo Colombo, I address you in the Italian form of your name, since it is generally believed that you were originally from Genoa in Italy. Today, October 11th, 2015, marks the 523rd anniversary of the day that land was spotted from the port side of your famous vessel, the Santa Maria, by a member of your crew. You later petitioned your sponsors, King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella, to award you the promised reward for the first land sighting, on the grounds that it was you who first saw the light earlier that evening. And you did receive the award. But as historians point out, 2 days after the sighting, you made calculations in your journal which would make it clear to any skilled mariner like yourself that when you supposedly saw those lights, you were still at least 40 nautical miles from the island you eventually landed on. And at that distance, there is no way you could have seen anything indicating that land was there. So it would seem that you knowingly cheated your crewmen out of a prize that was rightfully his. Here in the 21st century, many people have been casting you not as the hero you were once seen as, but as one whose exploits in the New World launched centuries of oppression of the various indigenous peoples who had occupied the land long before European colonists like yourself arrived. They speak not of your discovery of America, but of your conquest or invasion of these lands. The city I live in, Berkeley, California, has in fact renamed Columbus Day Indigenous Peoples Day. Berkeley was the first city to do this back in 1992 when celebrations of the quincentennial, the 500th anniversary of your arrival in the Americas, was going on. It was a protest against venerating an explorer who conquered, exploited, and enslaved the native people he encountered. Last year, both Seattle and Minneapolis also renamed your former day Indigenous Peoples Day. Other cities that have done this include Santa Cruz and Sebastopol, California, and Denver, Colorado. And there are more cities every year considering making this switch. The state of South Dakota calls the former Columbus Day Native American Day. And Hawaii renamed it Discoverer's Day in honor of the Polynesian explorers who discovered the Hawaiian Islands. You see, Admiral Colombo, our consciousness has changed. And now many wish to honor the millions of people who were the actual discoverers of the New World some of whom arrived 20,000 years before you did. Many of these first peoples were, from the time of your voyage on, subjugated, impoverished, and infected by diseases imported from Europe. The specific people that you first encountered, who came to greet your vessels on October 12th in 1492, had already lived on that Bahamian island for hundreds of years. They were the Lacayan Taino, relatives of the Arawak peoples of the South American mainland. Here is an often quoted section of your journal in which you describe these first people you met. As I saw that they were very friendly to us and perceived that they could be much more easily converted to our holy faith by gentle means than by force, I presented them with some red caps and strings of beads to wear upon the neck, and many other trifles of small value, wherewith they were very much delighted and became wonderfully attached to us. Afterwards, they came swimming to the boats, bringing parrots, balls of cotton thread, javelins, and many other things which they exchanged for articles we gave them, such as glass beads and hawk's bells, which trade was carried on with the utmost goodwill. Weapons they have none, nor are acquainted with them, for I showed them swords which they grasped by the blades and cut themselves through ignorance. They have no iron, their javelins being without it. They are all of a good size and stature and handsomely formed. It appears to me that the people are ingenious and would be good servants, and I am of opinion that they would very readily become Christians, as they appear to have no religion. They very quickly learn such words as are spoken to them. If it please our Lord, I intend at my return to carry home six of them to your highnesses, that they may learn our language. Then on October 14th, you wrote, I do not see the necessity, and this was going on to some other islands. He said, I do not see the necessity of fortifying the place, as the people here are simple in warlike matters. As your highnesses will see by those seven which I have ordered to be taken and carried to Spain in order to learn our language in return, unless your highnesses should choose to have them all transported to Castile or held captive on the island. I could conquer the whole of them with 50 men and govern them as I pleased. October 15th, you wrote, about sunset, we anchored near the cape which terminates the island toward the west to inquire for gold. For the natives we had taken from San Salvador, that's the first island he named, told me that the people here wore golden bracelets upon their arms and legs. I believed pretty confidently that they had invented this story in order to find means of escape from us. Still, I determined to pass none of these islands without taking possession, because being once taken, it would answer for all times. Clearly, you, as a devout Christian, could see the virtues of these peoples. As you told Ferdinand and Isabella, they are an affectionate people, free from avarice and agreeable to everything. I certify to your highnesses that in all the world I do not believe there is a better people or a better country. They love their neighbors as themselves, and they have the softest and gentlest voices in the world and are always smiling. Well, they were for a while. Yet you were true to the time and place in which you lived, a Christian expansionist Europe which sought to force religious conversion and to increase its wealth and territory, often at the expense of native peoples in other parts of the world. White Christian explorers of your day considered themselves to be superior to the natives of other races they encountered. And as your now widely quoted journal entries make clear, you were no exception. What followed in these islands under your control as governor, Admiral, was a disgraceful exploitation of the land and its people. We in our century look with dismay upon the stories of how you failed as governor to control the greedy and vicious behavior of the Spanish colonists toward the natives. We read of how you returned to Spain and made a spectacle of the Taino you captured, parading them in the streets, how you returned to the islands with guns, cannons, horses, armor, swords, and vicious dogs to enslave the natives, forcing each of them to pay a tribute of a hawk's bell full of gold every 3 months, gold which was very scarce and had to be laboriously panned. We learn of how the hands of those Taino who failed to bring in their quota were cut off, of how the Spanish colonists in your charge raped the Taino women, of how many Taino fled to the mountains in fear or drank cassava poison to escape the torture and subjugation that the colonists inflicted. I, a non-indigenous inheritor of the New World, the Americas, which you and other Europeans claimed as your own, I read with horror and shame about how the indigenous populations were decimated through harsh treatment and the diseases brought from Europe. The Bahamian island chain, which you found, for instance, was populated by several million indigenous people before you arrived. But in just 20 years under Spanish rule, there were about 28,000 left. In 30 years more, there were a few hundred. And in another decade or two, the Taino, these people you called gentle and kind, who met your vessels in friendship, these people were extinct as a separate people. This pattern was repeated throughout the southern and northern American continents by other colonists from Spain, from France, Portugal, the Netherlands, and England. Whole native tribes were wiped out or drastically reduced. And when the early colonists ran out of what you called Indians to enslave, you then began to bring Africans to the island as slaves, to the islands. The practice of taking Africans as slaves was also carried out over 100 years after your voyages in North America, and it left a legacy of deep-rooted racism and interracial enmity that persists to this day. In addition to the human carnage and the legacy of slavery and genocide that you and subsequent European colonists left us, there is the heritage of land abuse, exploiting and despoiling the earth, a trend that continues today. Rather than dwelling in some balance with harmony and harmony with nature and with the earth, as many of the native peoples like the Taino had done for centuries, the colonists treated the land as a resource to be used up. Your journal entries make clear that you wanted to exploit the land you stumbled upon, to force it to yield up its treasures, gold, cotton, and spices, and to make it into a Renaissance European-style community without regard for its indigenous plant and animal life and its people. One recent historian points out that although your writing indicates that you thought the land was exceedingly beautiful, you had a limited way of describing it, saying over and over again that it was green and fertile and had many different kinds of plants that you had never seen before. Granted, Admiral, you were a mariner and not a botanist, but you and other Europeans' ignorance, yours and other Europeans' ignorance and exploitation of species and the extermination of whole species before modern scientists could ever even imagine what was there. You set a pattern of such exploitation that continues into our time. Observers, even in your own day, noted that within a few years after Spanish plants and animals were introduced, the land's natural beauty was spoiled. Its grasses were grazed over, the soil was eroding, the forests were cleared, many species were made extinct, and much territory was made into a desert. When I was a girl, we called you Christopher Columbus, and we thought of you as a brave hero. So have many people over the centuries. There are around 50 cities and counties in the United States named after you, as well as numerous rivers, mountains, bridges, parks, highways, and buildings. Hundreds of poems and stories and plays have been written about you. Half of my own heritage is Italian, and as I learned when young, to many Italian Americans you were and are a symbol of pride in Italian accomplishment. And you were, for all of your prejudices and your misdeeds, you were a remarkable mariner and a self-educated man who was steadfast in the face of skepticism and ridicule when people mocked you for believing that such an arduous journey was even possible. You were clever, and you were a good talker. You finally convinced the Spanish king and queen that you would find a passage to Asia by going west, one that would open up better trade routes, since some of the eastern passages were closed off by the Ottomans. Your cleverness may even have saved your life and that of your crewmen at one point when in 1504 you were stranded in Jamaica. The natives there refused to give you food, but you consulted your almanac and discovered that there was about to be a lunar eclipse. And you told the natives your god was angry at them and that the moon would rise inflamed with wrath. There's a picture of this on the other side of the song in the insert. The moon would rise inflamed with wrath. So the eclipse of the moon that soon followed this threat was terrifying to the natives, and it scared them into supplying you and your crew with provisions. You would probably be amazed to learn that the new world you stumbled upon is so vast. You actually miscalculated the size of the earth, and you died still believing that you had come upon Asia by going west, and that China and Japan lay just beyond the islands you explored. Other explorers after you soon realized that there were actually two whole continents and a vast ocean before Asia could be reached. In school, I learned a number of things. That you set out to prove that the earth is round, although most educated people of your day already knew that. That you were the first European to set foot in America, although I later learned that American land was encountered earlier, not just by Norse explorers 500 years before you, but possibly even earlier by Celtic sailors, and then possibly by Portuguese explorers and fishing ships from European ports like Brittany, Bordeaux, and Galicia, somewhat before you landed. I remember as a fifth grader reciting a dramatic poem about your voyage, in which you were cast as a hero who bravely fended off a brewing mutiny among your crew. I have since learned that even that was a myth, that in fact you, in one of your moody exaggerations, trumped up a story about your crew getting rebellious just to dramatize your journey, and perhaps also because you were feeling bitter toward the captain of one of the vessels in your fleet. But despite all the current Columbus bashing and demythologizing, your voyage remains a pivotal event in history. With that fateful land sighting 523 years ago today, the world changed radically. Unlike earlier explorers, you were on an official royal mission to help Spain expand and colonize, And your voyage was well publicized, and it was carefully documented so that the way back to Europe was learned. So along with your three ships, a new era was launched. As Kirkpatrick Sale put it in his book, The Conquest of Paradise, the exact moment of Columbus's landing rings down through the corridors of time, not because one foreigner comes to a tiny Bahamian island, but because thus begins the European conquest of the world. Well, Admiral, some people are saying that we cannot any longer celebrate the anniversary of your landing in good conscience, because we know that since then there have been over 500 years of domination and exploitation of lands and peoples. But I believe that there is now a great deal to celebrate. You were the product of your own time, perhaps no worse than some later explorers, and we are products of our own time. The very fact that many people are questioning whether we should celebrate a Columbus Day, especially without some recognition of the suffering of native peoples under domination, the very fact that we're talking about this indicates a profound change of consciousness from your day to ours. In your time, the debate among some was whether native non-European peoples were even humans with souls. Even when they were acknowledged as humans, most Europeans saw them as innately inferior to whites. Although sadly, there are still those who would argue for the superiority of the white race over all others, the world consensus is moving toward acknowledgement of racial equality and an understanding that the rights of native peoples the world over have been denied and should be restored. Also dawning in this 21st century is greater and greater awareness worldwide of how our exploitation and squandering of the Earth's natural resources is coming back to haunt us. How in our continuing rush for development and material wealth, we have ecologically endangered and spiritually impoverished ourselves. It occurs to me that in viewing and forming opinions about you in these times, we are really not looking at you, whom we really know little about, but we are looking right into a mirror. The image in that mirror may be painful, especially for those of us in the dominant culture, those of us who are the heirs and the beneficiaries of an ignoble tradition of exploitation and domination. But looking hard into that mirror may be the beginning of a long voyage for many of us, individually and collectively, a voyage to an inner landscape where we can begin to rediscover a new America within ourselves and in each other. This new America is multicolored and multicultural, a place where freedom is real and justice is the norm, where peace reigns, oppression is unthinkable, and caring for the earth is common practice. This America that we are still looking for may yet be a ways off, somewhere beyond our present horizon. And yet, look yonder. I think I see a light.